Bishus Marino, Rav Shlita. Gedola hachnosos archi mekabonos pnei hashchino. Having guests is greater than receiving HaKadosh Baruch Hu's presence. This is the Gemara in Shabbos Kuf Chaf Zayin. How do we learn it out? From Avraham Avinu. Why is this mitzvah singled out amongst all others? That entertaining guests is something so great. Avraham Avinu said, "Vayomer Adonai nomot sosi chein beinecho anos avam me'al avdecho." In Vayera, Perek Yud Ches, Pasuk Gimel. If it finds favor in your eyes, please don't pass from your servant. And literally, the pasuk's taken to mean when he was talking to the angels, whom he thought were ordinary human beings. He says, you know, please don't go away. I want you to come into my house. But strangely, it's written in the singular, even though there was more than one angel there. And the Gemara in Shavuos, Lamed Hayamad Beis, refers to it as being that he's talking to Hashem, and that Aleph Dalet Nun Yud is Hashem's name. In fact, it's the first instance where Hashem is referred to. Gemara in Brachos Zayin says it's the first instance where Hashem is referred to as Aleph Dalet Nun Yud, because he is the master of the universe. We are like strangers in Hashem's world, and he is making us our guests. And Rabbeinu Bechaya says in Kara Kemach that Hachnosos Ochin gives us this godly connection. Because Hashem sustains all creatures of the world, we are sustaining people when they come into our houses. So he was basically saying to Hashem, you wait there, I'm busy now, I've got these guests to bring in my house. Is that a nice thing to say to Melech Malchei Amlochim HaKadosh Baruch Hu? And not only that, by chasing after the guests, as Rav Yonah Sanaibshitz, he was turning his back on HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And how did Avraham Avinu know that this is a justified thing to do? This is a question of the Noda Behuda. Rabbi Cheska Lando asks this. Rashi says that Hashem specially brought out the sun to make it very hot, so that nobody would come along and be a burden to Avraham Avinu, who Hashem knew was looking for guests. So that would avoid the problem. But surely, if Hashem is visiting him in any case for Bikkur Cholin from his Bismillah, then that in itself should have stopped Avraham Avinu from going out to chase guests. If you've got Hashem visiting you and talking with you, then you're not going to go and chase guests. Horaya, that's the proof that it wasn't enough. Hashem visiting him wasn't enough to make him chase guests, and Hashem knew this. So that is the answer to say that Gedol Achnosoch Mekabolas Pehashchina was correct in halachic terms for Avraham Avinu to say to Hashem, sorry, wait there, because the bringing out of the sun was not enough. And the Rambam brings this down in Hechos Ovel Perek Yudalot Halachobes, that this Gedol Achnosoch Mekabolas Pehashchina is a halachic issue. It's a halachic issue that you are entitled to make Hashem wait. What does that mean? Well, what if your guests unexpectedly turn up and you're about to go to a shir? What's the halach? Now, there are different ways of treating your guests, and certainly you must be nice to them and you must be rude to them. And I've been on occasions to places where some very strange things have been said by the hosts. Indeed, things which you might feel a bit unwelcoming. Well, it was a good friend of mine who said to me that he wanted his Shabbos Shluf, and he said, well, I've got to go, I can't go to bed because I've got guests. What's your excuse? Perhaps the most amazing thing said to me was by one fellow who had invited me to his daughter's wedding, and he said to me, I don't know why I'm spending all this money. All the money I'm spending ends up in sewerage and River Thames anyway. Alright, you don't really feel like going to the wedding when you hear that. I know of a case where there's one shul, whenever I go to it, the seating is always filled up, but whenever I go to it, even if I go early, and I think, I'll make sure I get a place before davening starts, before anybody's there, every single time I go there, somebody comes up to me and says, you're sitting in my seat. Mok and Kavua, I have to sit there. You know, is it the fact that Hashem won't accept your prayers if you sit in another seat? Is it the fact that guests have to be told, you're sitting in my seat? It's unbelievable, but it happens so many instances. You know, let the guest be feeling welcome. Let the guest have somewhere to daven, so sit somewhere else. It's unbelievable how often this happens. And I know of a case which happened just straight after the war, of a young man. Well, he was a teenager, he was only about 14 years old, and his parents were killed in Auschwitz, and he had no relatives left, and he managed to escape on the Kinder transport into Switzerland, and he went into a shul there, and he stood there, he went in there for Rosh Hashanah, and he was told, you can't sit in that seat, it's somebody else's. He wasn't told, well, at least you can sit somewhere else. And where he tried sitting, oh, you can't sit there. And he walked out of the shul, and he just gave up on Yiddishkeit, and he went to work on a farm, and he married out. We don't know what the consequences can be of our actions. Fortunately, in that particular case, years later, he slowly got back to Yiddishkeit again with the help of his children. And they all went through a gerus, and he was a very fine Elifei Yid, who I knew later. We don't understand the consequences of our actions. So, alright, we won't say these nasty things to our guests. But can you say, oh, I'm on my way to shul now, I'm awfully sorry, but you know, it's Philip and Sibyl, I have to dumb with a minion. What do you do when people turn up unexpectedly at your door and you've got this dilemma? Indeed, what if I'm leaving my house on my way to go to a bagel shir where I'm giving the shir, what is the din? And people turn up unexpectedly at my house. And then what do we define as orchim? What are guests? Do we say that anybody who turns up at your door is called a guest? Or do we say it's only a poor person? Do we say it's somebody whom you formally invited? I mean, do we say that having your friends around socialising, is that called achnosas orchim? We'll have to have a look at that. And to what extent do you bend over to help the orchim? What extent might you put yourself into some sort of risk of danger? We know that Lot risked danger to himself in Sodom when the angels came after they left Avraham Avinu. They were going for his life, the Sodomites. Hardly an example, though, if he's willing to give away his daughters. And Lot wasn't exactly the most biggest tzaddik. In fact, we are told that the reason why he was saved from Sodom was by virtue of his uncle Avraham, and not really by virtue of himself. And in fact, the Torah gives very little attention to the story when they came to Sodom. You might think, if Lot put himself in danger, surely there should be much more intricate detail about what happened with Lot. But really, the Torah gives us intricate detail of what happened with Avraham Avinu in the Parsha of Vayera when the angels came. Even the menu and how he prepared it and the involvement of Sarah and Yishmael and so on. So why is it that the Torah gives very little attention to Lot when he put himself into danger, whereas Avraham Avinu, he wasn't in any danger. Hashem was going out of his way to try and stop him from entertaining guests, bringing out the hot sun, he was recuperating from an operation, he had plenty of excuses. So Rabbi Levi Yitzchak of Berditchev says, Lot knew that they were angels. He knew they were distinguished. So he felt, oh, I'll get saved anyway if I'm in danger. But Avraham Avinu thought they were ordinary Arabs. He just thought that they were simple idolaters, and he went out of his way to bring him in. So Hashem gives us an emphasis on what happened with Avraham Avinu, where he, lifnim mishuras hadin, went out of his way to bring these people in, even though he didn't have to. He was recuperating, the sun was hot, Hashem was visiting him, and despite of all these circumstances, he says to Hashem, hold on a minute, just hang on, I've got some business to do out there. I've got some people to entertain. First of all then, what are orchim? The Ramah, Siman Shin Lamed Gimel in Hilchas Shabbos, actually defines what orchim really are, if you formally invited them, or if they're people who came from afar. And the Ramah is intimating there that not any simple socializing is called guests. But in what context is the Ramah saying this? Are we going to say that guests are people who are needy, relations who come from afar, from out of town? Is that simply guests and nothing else is guests? What are the issues here? The Ramah is talking about the situation where there is a din called mafnin. And the Gemara in Perek Yudches of Shabbos talks about it, where you would be removing bales of straw to make way for your guests. And it's not permitted normally to move these on Shabbos as a din derabbanan, because of Tichy Yaseirah, maybe because of Muksa and so on. So there is an exception made where you're going to have guests. And there are other times in Halacha where we go lenient on certain din and drabbonon or certain chumras, because Mishum Arachim, because of guests, so important it is to be able to facilitate yourself to have guests. Another important example of this is in Yeridat Hilchas Melicha, on the dinim of salting meat. Normally, when you salt meat, you will leave the salt on for 1 hour. But then it says, but if you're pressed for time because guests are coming, then it's good enough if you leave the salt on for 20 or 30 minutes. Does that mean that you're going to eat treif meat, you're eating blood? Chas v'shalom, no. It's a chumrah. The rabbi said, leave the salt on for 1 hour. But mekadin, after 20 minutes, the salt is already drawn. And so we will make an exception and be more lenient in Hilchas Melicha because guests are approaching. Now, the Pischei Teshuvah goes a bit more lenient than the Ramon. He says, well, anybody can be regarded as guests. And in Yeridah, in Simon Samach Tes, in Yud Gimel, he says, we stretch this to anybody. And the Trumas Hadesh discusses this in Ayin Beis, that the Ikka idea of guests are people who come from afar, or relations who have special needs. But he says, possibly we might include everything. So when do we include guests as proper guests, or when don't we? So Rav Moshe Halberstam writes, he says, anybody who comes to your door, it's a mitzvah, machnosos arachim, anyone at all. But the leniencies which we've been talking about, such as the salting of the meat or the din of matnan on Shabbos, that's talking about those special guests the Ramoy is referring to, who are coming from out of town or are in special needs or are poor people. But if you have your some friend or neighbor around for a chat, but there we won't be so lenient on bending these rules, these dinim de rabbonon. And in fact, I think you can get a proof from this from Pekei Avos, because there you got Yosef ben Yochanan and Yosef ben Yehezer at the beginning talking about your house should be a place of learning, and then it says your house should be an open house, and then it says you aniyim b'nei ve'secho. And poor people should be b'nei ve'secho in your house. So you've got two separate ideas here. You should have an open house, and in addition to that, you are niyam b'nei ve'secho. Well, if you are niyam b'nei ve'secho is such an important din, that would obviously be included in, it would be included in the din of having an open house. But the perek makes a separate indication of the importance of guests, which is a proof that although Hachnosokin can apply to anyone and anybody, including your friends, there are special indications and exceptions made when you've got poor people, and namely others who come from afar. I mean, Vayichan Shom Yisrael Neged Ahor, Ki Ish Echod B'Lev Echod, to create an Achdus in Klal Yisrael, that we are unified. And we've got the 3 weeks starting next week, and we're in Golus because of lack of communication between ourselves and our fellow Jew. We can enhance this by the mitzvah, not just with people who we don't know, people who are strangers, but also people whom we know well, people with whom we socialize. The Tzitz Eliezer in Chelek Vav, Lama Dalet, says there's another inyan of having guests, and that is especially on Shabbos, it creates an onik Shabbos to have guests at your table. And the Sefer Kochva Yitzchok says there's an inyan of kavod abrios, of giving honor to mankind, even if there isn't a mitzvah of hachnosas orchim. Yes, non-Jews as well. Kavod abrios includes non-Jews. Avraham Avinu was going after non-Jews, and hachnosas orchim includes them as well. And whereas tzedakah has a limit, we say up to a fifth or whatever, and tzedakah you can only give to poor people, the Chofetz Chaim says, kachnos nochim, you can give to rich people as well. And Eilu Dvarim Shein Lahem Shir, we say every morning, the first mission of Peor, and kachnos nochim is one of those, and that's Eilu Dvarim Shein Lahem Shir. There's no limit, like there might be a limit with tzedakah, there's no limit when it comes to kachnos nochim. So, the Chofetz Chaim took the mitzvah achnosas orchim so important, and he was worried that the guests might be feeling hungry, that whenever he had guests, he delayed singing Shalom Aleichem on Friday night until after Hamotzi, in case they'd be hungry. And he just dived straight into Kiddush. And in fact, there is a halacha which Chofetz Chaim brings in the Mishneh Berurah, in Tov Reish Lamed Tes, in Hilchos Sukkah, in Mishneh Berurah Lamed Hei, that although on the first night, if it's raining, you should even wait till midnight to be able to eat in the sukkah without rain. Otherwise, other days of sukkahs, you don't have to worry about the rain. But on the first night, you might even wait till the rain stops. But when you have guests, says you don't wait, you start straight away because you've got achlas haserachim to do, and the guests might be hungry. And the Rambam writes in Hilchos Yom Tov Perek Vav Halacha Yud Ches, the one who celebrates Yom Tov without guests is simply, it's not called Simchas Yom Tov, it's Simchas Kariso, it's just the joy of his stomach, of him satisfying his gastronomic needs. So what about this question of saying to the guests, oh, I'm sorry, I've got to go now, I've got to go to shul, I've got to daven, I've got to fill up a tzibur, I've got to go to a shiur, or I've got to give a shiur. Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach discusses in Mincha Shlomo and also in some other places about the problem of tefillah b'tzibur, and he says if leaving your guests causes them with a discomfort, you don't leave them, you stay at home and you entertain them. Alright, if it's somebody who's a male who will come to shul with you, you can say, would you like to come with me? But if it's a female, you wouldn't do that. Or if the fellow's davened already, or if he doesn't know how to daven, then you stay at home if it causes them discomfort. And the subject is discussed by Rav Yitzchok Zilberstein, who wrote the Avnei Choshen, about the idea of going to a shul. And he deals with this question of defining what is guests. What are the criteria for the leniencies? So he says, even those guests who don't meet the criteria of the leniencies we discussed, like the sorting of meat or muftin on Shabbos, they are still guests for other purposes, such as the absence from a shul or a shia. That means to say that even if they are not guests in that category, they're still called guests in the category where you are not entitled to leave them alone if you want to go to shul or a shia.
Can you define guests?
Pardon?
Can you define what you mean by guests?
Anyone who might come up to you, I'm not talking about somebody who's collecting, somebody who is in need of hospitality, or somebody who assumes that you'll be there to open the door for them. I'll tell you a story which is in connection with Yitzchok Silberstein, which might illustrate this point. The Sefer Aleinu L'Shabeach talks about this. There was a Ben Torah who was just leaving his house and locking up to go to shul for a shir. It was on a Chol HaMoed, and relations of his were just approaching, a young couple, and they were doing like a yontav visit, because he's a relation, it was a cousin or something, and they were approaching him. And he said to them, oh, I'm sorry, could you come back later? I'm on my way to a shir. And there was a neighbour who saw this and rebuked this Ben Torah. He said, why do you do this? You know, these are guests, and they're guests in the remote sense of the word. And this fellow said, no, I don't believe that. They're not typical guests. They're relations, and they're not guests. And Rav Zilberstein writes about this. He says, even if you don't call this hachnas asarachim, you've still got a mitzvah of after reich kamoch. You love your neighbor like yourself. As it happened, those relations who turned up felt offended, and they didn't come back after. And he says, it was wrong of this fellow to say, I'm going to a shir. He should have brought them in, entertained them, would you like a cup of tea, drink, coffee, and so on. Maybe he might have shortened things somewhat, or whatever, depending on the circumstances. But he was wrong to say, I'm going to the shir. His duty was to give priority to these people who are coming, and even if they were not called guests in the definition of the rumor, whatever that definition is, and we've widened the definition through other poskim, it doesn't matter. Even if it's not called achras asarachim, it's after l'recho kamocho. You don't do that to people. It's downright rude. Unless efshalia de'achirim. What does that mean? If your wife is at home and she's able to entertain them while you're out for 10 minutes, 15 minutes, going to mincha, and they won't suffer any discomfort. Maybe they don't know your wife. Maybe they've never met her before. But if they know her and they're feeling at home with her, then you can just say, look, I'll be back in a few minutes. But the Rambam makes it very clear in Hilchos Talmud Torah, Perek Beis, Halacha Beis, Talmud Torah comes first, but then in Halacha Gimel he says, but if you've got another mitzvah that comes your way, then it's not possible to do with anybody else. That other mitzvah comes first, before Talmud Torah. And of course then any other mitzvah like Tefillah
B'Tzibur.
And I would venture to suggest, even if one is a novel and one wants to say Kaddish and one feels one has to daven in the Omud, the guest comes first. Yes?
If you're a tenth man at the minute, they're calling you, you're a tenth man, yes, you're right.
Then you say, if they phone you from the shul, you say, I'm sorry, I'm tied up at the moment. That is what he paskens. The shul do not have a minute. You've got your guests to consider. They could be starving hungry. They might have not slept for 3 days. They've been suffering from delays on the cross channel. They've been having flight delays. There's been a volcanic dust cloud. You don't know what's been happening to them. They're tired and hungry. It's your job to look after them.
Yes, it is okay if you know they've just come for a chat.
Well, if they've just come from around the corner, you've got to weigh up the circumstances. This is what makes the halacha so difficult. This is why it's greater from the Kabbalah's Pe'ashkina, because you have to use your discussion, you have to use your tact, you have to be able to conduct conversation on a level which is not necessarily your wavelength. It might be boring conversation for you. This is the difficulty of Achnosas Achim, to show that you enjoy having them in the way Avraham Avinu did. You might find them really boring people who just want to discuss football, which doesn't interest you. You've got the mitzvah to discuss football with them. Yes. That's what the Rambam says in Perek Beis Halacha Beis. Talmud Torah comes above everything. But he qualifies that in Halacha Gimel, that if you then got another mitzvah coming your way, she'ef shalya de'achirim, then the other mitzvah comes first. And there are different interpretations of Talmud Torah Kineket Kulam. Talmud Torah Kineket Kulam doesn't necessarily mean Torah comes first in all circumstances. It means Talmud Torah Kineget this mitzvah, Kineget that mitzvah. You've got 630 mitzvahs, and Talmud Torah is Kineget each one, because it relates to every single mitzvah. But that doesn't mean it overrides Hachnos Ochim when Hachnos Ochim comes your way. And of course, what about Halavai Saves? Are you going to leave a dead person lying on the street because you're on your way to a Shia? No, that's not Talmud Torah Kineged Kulam. If you've got your wife at home to look after them, if they say, "Oh, are you on your way to shul? We'll come with you," then fine. But if they're schlepping heavy suitcases and they couldn't get a taxi, and
no, appreciate it. These are unusual situations. A normal, more typical situation. Some guy's popping for a chat. But how do you deal with that? And
yes, if it's somebody with whom you're very, very close, you're a close friend of, and what you've got to ask yourself, what's the purpose of the fellow's visit? If it's to tell you he wants to discuss some urgent news with you, you look at the expression on his face. If he's just saying, "Oh, I was just in the area," and if you are a close friend and you know that close friend will fully understand, you could say, "Look, is it something urgent?" Because you could say, if it's a close friend, "I was on my way, but I'll stick around if it's something which is pressing." You can usually tell what the reason for their visit is. And if it's just saying, "Oh yeah, well, I just fancy popping in for a minute," you've got to use your discretion. It's difficult. There are mitzvahs where you have to use tact. When you give tzedakah, when you keep Shabbos, you're not using tact. You're keeping what the halacha says. And on this mitzvah, you really have to exercise your good nature as best as possible and weighing up the circumstances. Halacha can be a balance here. But then, of course, the question halachically is, Oseg b'mitzvah, potter min ha-mitzvah, which you spoke about a few weeks ago at the Yotzah of Rav Cooper Gershon. Do you say, "I'm involved in the mitzvah of having a shear, and therefore do I set aside Achnos Ochim?" Or, conversely, "I'm involved in the mitzvah Achnos Ochim, do I then set aside having the shear?" And the Stechemed writes, interestingly, about where you've got the mitzvah bein odom lachaveiro, which can set aside a mitzvah bein odom lamokum. The poskim are agreed that Osek mitzvah potter mitzvah applies when you engage the mitzvah bein odom lachaveiro. It sets aside the mitzvah bein odom lamokum, which is having your shear or davening tefillah b'tzibur. And a number of poskim write about this, and it's Rav Avraham Yisrael in the Sefer Ein Lama Mifshal who says, even if you're giving the shear, even if you've got 20 people waiting for you to come to give your bagel share, and this guy turns up at your door and is in need of Achnos Ochim, you have to attend to the guest. I just hope that dilemma never faces me, but that is what he says is the halacha. So important is this mitzvah Achnos Ochim. Okay, if I don't turn up, Gershon will kindly step in and he'll give the share.
If you are given priority to the guest rather than, for example, if you're an old girl going to sort of say Kaddish for a parent, in a way that's sort of aim.
It's kibbutz of aim. But when that ovel attends to the guest, that gives us a chus to the neshama as well, just like the kaddish would. And all right, if one kaddish a day is missed, you still said kaddish at your shachris or at your mariv. You didn't at your mincha. You've still got you got as a chus from the neshama by you doing a mitzvah. Every mitzvah you do in your year of avedus and afterwards is as a chus for your parents. So, yeah, okay, the guests might understand. Listen, I'm saying kaddish, I hope you don't mind, but you've got to weigh it up. How serious is it? If that guest will feel offended and not come back, and maybe that is the test, would that guest not come back if I say something which will embarrass or upset them? But, you know, some people might not appreciate the importance of saying kaddish. But what about if you put yourself into a chashash of danger? We spoke about Lot in Sodom. Obviously, you don't put yourself into danger. The Chai Bohem. The mitzvahs, you can't put you or your family into a situation where you're putting yourself. What about spiritual danger? Obviously, you're not going to bring in guests who might be a bad influence for your children. The Gemara in Brachos, Daf Yud, says that bringing a Chochem or Tzaddik into your house is like bringing over a Korban. It's such a wonderful thing. And the Meiri writes in Brachos Ayin Daled that one is praised for bringing a Talmid Chacham into one's house. But what if it's a bad influence? That's a spiritual danger. That there is a view that Noach was called Ish Tzadik Tomim Hayav Darosov, but he was criticized. He wasn't like Avraham Avinu. Avraham Avinu brought in guests. So Noach didn't bring in guests, but Noach, he lived in such a terrible era of spiritual deprivation. He knew that if he brings people into his house as guests, it will cause spiritual harm to his family. It will corrupt them. So he closed up his doors and he kept to himself. So there's a question of balance here. People come into your house, they use bad language, they talk Lashon Hara. We don't know what effect it might have on our children. So there you're entitled to say, we're not having this person in our house. I once had an experience when I came out of my house 11:30 at night. I was going for a short walk somewhere and there was a stranger standing outside, big hat and a beard, and he said to me, without even saying hello, he said, can you put me up for the night? I didn't know him from Adam. So I think to myself, you know, I've got a mitzvah, the fellow, you know, who asked me at 11:30 at night, he needs a bed for the night, he's obviously in great need for it. He's obviously got nowhere else to go. But then I say to myself, I don't know who he is. I've got a wife and children in the house. I've got a teenage daughter in the house. I don't know what he might try and do in the middle of the night. For all I know, he might be schizophrenic. And I think to myself, I can't bring him in the house. And even if he's a tzaddik, you know, if he's going to the toilet at 3 o'clock in the morning and my wife is getting up at the same time, she'll scream when she sees a stranger in the house. What am I going to do? So I thought, there's no way I can bring him into the house unless somebody referred him to me, somebody who I know, or I could explain to my wife that she was asleep already. What do I do? So I said, come for a walk with me. And I got in touch with somebody else, and with this person's help, we booked him into a hotel. He really had nowhere to go. I said, where did you sleep last night? Oh, I slept with some shlochim in Stamford Hill, but I can't get back there now and it's full up. So we arranged for him to go into a hotel up the road and he had his bed for the night. Okay, but I felt justifiably, I didn't have to take him into my house given those circumstances at that time. Wow. One aspect of Hachnosos Arachim, which is often overlooked significantly, which I'd like to concentrate a little bit on, is that not only is it a mitzvah to give your guests food and drink and a bed for the night, but something which is given a great reward more than the food and the drink and the bed is to accompany them when they leave. The mitzvah of Levio, or Levaya. And Levaya we do for the dead. But really, there is an even bigger mitzvah here for doing it for the living. The Gemara in Sota, Daf Mem Vav, learns this out from the mitzvah of Eglah Rufo. Well, we don't know who killed a person. A corpse is found. And the Pasuk says, Yodeinu lo shofchu es hadam azeh veinenu lo ro. Are the Beis Din admitting that they were guilty of a murder of a person? Obviously not. But they're saying that we maybe left this person go without food on his journey. He was unaccompanied on his journey. So the Sibor accepts some sort of blame for the fact that a person died on his journey. And with Avraham Avinu it says Vayita Eishel Beveshova, and Chazal says Eishel is Rosh Tavis, Aleph for Achila, Shin for Shasiya, food and drink, and Lamed is for Leviya, or some say Lino, but Lamed is for Leviya, to accompany the guests. And there are a number of Poskim who say, why is it that this is so much ignored? The Rambam brings down in Hilchas Ovel, Perek Yudad, Halacha Gimel, that one has to walk at least Dalad Amos, four Amos, with one's guest outside one's property. And one who doesn't is Ki'ilu Shofeich Domim. It's as if you are guilty of manslaughter. So the Gemara Sota talks about different categories, that if it's one's Rav, one might accompanying him at a much greater distance, a Parasod, Gimel Parasod, a special Rav, or Kavamas Chaveru Be'er Dalad Amos is one thing, Eino Nizek, but a Rav LaTalmid, is it Buroshin here, the border of the town, or the Tuchum Shabbos. But the Ikar is at least Dalad Amos. The Chavetz Chaim asks this in his Sefer Avas Chesed, why is it that this is so much neglected? And the Maharal in the Sivas Olam, in his section on Gemilas Chasodim, Simon Hay, discusses that when you accompany a person, because you might say, well, if it's a question of security and safety, maybe I should accompany them the whole way. But if you accompany them the whole way, then you've got to make your own way back. So what is this idea of you accompany them part of the way? And he explains it's because when you are accompanying a guest part of your way, you are causing the Shechina to come onto that guest to accompany them for the rest of the way. So this is already something a bit more mystical, but it's from Hashem Yisborach that by accompanying the guest it creates a divine protection for the whole journey. So why is it that people neglect this? The Sefer Aruch HaShulchan asks the question, and there in Choshen Mishpot, of all places, in Siman Tov Chavov, near the very end, Sif Beis, he says, Achshav Lo Negu B'zeh. Why is it that this din is so neglected to accompany at least for some greater distance? He says, Mibnei Shein Holchim B'regel. He says, well, nowadays guests don't go by foot so much anymore. They're not walking. Elonosim Bekaron, he says. They're going in a carriage. All right. Cars, trains, aeroplanes. He says, and another thing about guests is they're often not travelling on their own, because they're travelling in a carriage. Somebody's riding the horse, or there's a train guard, or there's a bus driver. So he tries to be melamed zechus why people are not fulfilling this din so much nowadays. But really, the din still exists. And the Ramah discusses this already in Siman Tov Chafot, but not in the Ramah, but in the Darkei Moshe, which he writes, which is on other sections of the Shulchan Aruch. Then in Choshen Ishbar, he says people are mochel on the covered. People are travelling, they're mochel on the covered. It's alright, you don't want to come with me. I don't want to trouble you. I don't want to take you out of your house. But at least, he says, take them up to the gates of the city if you don't go further with them. Or at least go with them Dalad Amos. Don't just see them to the door. It's not good enough just to see them up to your front door. And what's interesting is that the Shalos Tshuvos B'Tzel HaChochma, or B'Tzel HaShtern, discusses the modern implications, because nowadays with cars and with trains and with aeroplanes, he says, well, you've got a guest who might be driving to you by car, and you've got a car outside your front door. So you can't exactly bring him to the border of the town, or can you? Do you have a duty to go with him in his car? That maybe you should accompany him either in his car or drive your car and drive behind him. So this is a bit about being the modern Jew, as we discussed last time. What do we say in such circumstances? His conclusion is that Mi'ikadin, it's Dalad Amos. And he goes into various sources to say Dalad Amos. And if the guy's car is less than Dalad Amos, you walk with him up to his car. You can't really do with him more. But ideally, he says, it is better if you can accompany him further. You might travel with him in his car for a little bit. I just want to carry on chatting with you a bit more. Drop me off at the station. And then you make your own way back. Although Mi'ikadin, he says, is Dalad Amos. And if it's a train, then ideally you should take them to the station. All right, even though it's not Ibur HaShanir. So drive them to Euston. Well, take them to Heathrow Airport. That would be a good way of doing things. And Sechoro Maruba Ma'ot, he says, the reward is very great. A very important thing. So one has to always not just think of the security, because it's not just security and welfare of the guest. It's also giving cover to the guest when you can accompany them for that kind of distance. We haven't really discussed how you behave when you have your guest, but we've spoken about the things you don't say to your guest. But there are tiny instances. I once had an experience when my Rosh Hashiva, I was honoured, he came to my house and he was having a plate of soup with me. And then my wife said to him, "Would you like some seconds?" And he said, "Oh, yes, please." And then my wife said to me, "Would you like some seconds?" And I hesitated. And he said to me, "You have to say yes." Because the guest might feel uncomfortable when they're having seconds and you're having seconds. You have to have your seconds just so that they don't feel uncomfortable when they're having their seconds. That everything you do should be for their comfort and not to embarrass them. And we all know the story of Rabbi Akiva Reger, when the guest knocked some drink down and made a big spillage on the table. He immediately knocked his drink down and said, "Oh, we do have to do something about this shaky table." To do anything you can to avoid embarrassing guests, because guests do get very easily embarrassed, and one has to do everything that one can to make them feel at home. There are a number of benefits which incur on guests when you have them. And there's a sefer called Seder Hayom, which speaks about the various benefits which a guest has. And one of them, he says, is giving a spiritual benefit, talking Torah at the table. The Seder Hayom, Rav Menachem ben Makir, he says there are different types of chesed when you have your guests. You're providing a resting place for the tired, you're providing food and drink, you're saving travellers from shame having to seek a lodging, and you can be kind to a total stranger. And then the fifth thing he says is to impact spiritually as well as physically. We know that Avraham Avinu was Megayis HaGerim, and Sarah was Megayis HaAnoshim, he was Megayis HaAnoshim, that you're giving a spiritual benefit to your guests. And in this connection, I found an interesting Gemara in Sanhedrin Sadi Tef, Amadeus, which talks about a certain non-Jewish woman called Timna. Timna is referred to in the Parsha of Vayishlach as a Pilegesh of the son of Esau, Eliphaz. The Simna Ha'esau Pilegesh. Who was this Timna? She was a princess, says the Gemara. She was a foreign princess. Someone told me she was a princess in Egypt, but I haven't found a source for which country she was a princess from. And she was very intrigued with Avraham, Yitzhak and Yaakov, and she came along and she wanted to join the clan. She wanted to be Megaya. Now we know that Avraham Avinu went out of his way to bring in guests, and he was Megaya plenty of people, and Sarah was Megaya plenty of people, but for some reason, we don't know why, she was turned away. She wanted to join with the clan, as it were. So since she was turned away and she wanted to be associated with this Choshevah family, she was Pilegesh le'Eliphaz bas Esav. She then became the Pilegesh, the concubine of Eliphaz. Omra, she said, Mutav shete shivcha le'umazu, I'd rather be just a maidservant in this people, below to something important. I shouldn't be Choshuva le'uma acheres. That I shouldn't have to be a princess as anywhere else. And the question is asked by Rav Chaim Shmulevich in his Sefer Sichas Musa. He says, what would have happened if Avraham Avinu would have accepted her? Do we realize that by us rejecting her, for whatever reason, she was a concubine of Eliphaz, and who did she give birth to? Amalek. Can you imagine? There would have never been an Amalek if we would have accepted her. Chas v'shalom to suggest it was Avraham Avinu's fault, but we have to realize that when we turn people away, or we don't give them some spiritual benefit when they come into our houses, what is the effect we might be having on them? I spoke earlier about the guy who was told that he's sitting in somebody else's seat in shul, and he ended up marrying out. Here is a case where somebody was turned away, and the biggest problem we've ever had in our lives as Jewish people throughout our history, including the Nazi era, is to have to contend with our Molech. It's mind-boggling. I don't know about Muhammad. But Rav Chaim Shmulevitch talks about Osoa Ish, the way we dealt with Yoshki. That if we would have been showing more love, more attention to these people who are on the fringe, who might be breaking away, then they might not have been causing so much damage. And there are a number of Jews who changed the world. Let me see if I can remember them. Karl Marx, Einstein, Freud, Trotsky, Jesus. When the Jews go off the track, it's not like a cyclist who wobbles, it's like a railway train going fast off the track, going to another extreme. And if we can just try and bring in these people and accommodate these people, then they might not be doing so much damage to the welfare of the Jewish people. But, no, I'm not saying damage in all those. Einstein, he could have been of great benefit to the Jewish people had he been Shomer Torah Mitzvahs, with a brain like his. No, I'm not saying he did damage, but I'm saying that when people who have the Jewish spark don't keep Yiddishkeit, and they are not keeping Yiddishkeit, how much they are doing, how much effect they are doing. Listen, you might say communism was a wonderful thing because it saved a lot of people from poverty. So was Karl Marx a wicked man? No. But these are people who had an effect on the world. Jewish people who had an effect, who were not within the fold. I'd like to mention my parents. They had this thing that they would always offer somebody who they knew was getting engaged. They would offer a Sheva Bracha straight away. And even if they didn't have a lot of money, okay, they cut corners in the way they did it. Some people think you've got to have a caterer and you've got to spend out and splash out a lot of money. You can make a simple meal and invite other people in for benching if you're not able because of space or because of money. But offer a Sheva Brachos. The chances are is that the couple will be fully booked. Okay. But if you offer that Sheva Brachos, you don't know how much it means to them. And you never know. There was once in this very community a family whose child was getting married, and they were a well-to-do family. And my parents offered a Sheva Brachos. And they admitted that they didn't have enough to fill up the week. And they were grateful and accepted my parents' offer, who made them a Sheva Brachos. It was unbelievable. But this was an example which we should follow.
That was on record. Cheskel, my amazing brother Cheskel, once told me he was invited by his father to one of these Sheva Brachos.
I didn't know.
It was a tiny, tiny Sheva Brachos. I think the numbers were made up. Cheskel was a teenager. I think some of the numbers were made up of Hasmonean boys, you know, who came out of school for their lunch break for Sheva Brachos. Cheskel said it was one of the most memorable and wonderful shows I've ever seen.
Yeah, well, it was probably a weekday if the Hasmonean boys came around, and it's not easy to get people. There's an interesting Chasam Sofer. In his Salash HaTshuvas, there's a section at the beginning of the Chelak on Yerodeo where he does a Hakdoma called Pituchei Choson. He says, what is the essence of a human being? That a person should try all the time to be lehetiv darkei b'nei odom. A person should relate well to other people. Kadei sheyismach Hashem b'maso, that Hashem will be happy in his deeds. So a person has to show love to other people, and that gives a shleimus atzmo. That completes his own personality. And this is what Rabbi Akiva meant when he says, klal gadol b'Torah, lo havta l'racha kamocha. What does it mean, v'havta l'racha kamocha is a klal gadol b'Torah? There are different explanations. But he says, the Torah Daikor, Kalal Yisod Godel Belimut HaTorah, that the only way you can excel in learning Torah and being a Ben Torah is to relate well to other people and to show love to other people. That is intrinsic to your becoming a Ben Torah. It's not that you've got Ben Adam L'Chaveray, Ben Adam Nochem L'Nochem as two separate things. It's all one and the same thing. That you, the way you relate to Hashem, the way you learn your Torah, you will only do it properly. A qualification to that is to relate well to other people and to be nice to other people and to invite other people. And that the highest peak of Torah is human relationships. And the Altar of Kelm says that other acts of chesed are really outside your house and more limited. You give tzedakah, you help the blind man across the road. But when you bring somebody into your house, it's bringing someone into your own territory. Every person appreciates their own little space, their territory. They like to draw a circle around themselves, that when they close their front door, they got their privacy, they got their home. The Englishman's home is his castle. But when you've got this situation where somebody else is sharing your toothpaste, or your hot water, and you're waiting to get into the bathroom, you're giving up something which is very deep inside yourself. And that is why Hachnosas Ochim is the greatest of all, Mikabalas Paneh HaShechinah. And the Baal Shem Tov writes that when you're entertaining your guest, and you might be engaged in dull talk, and you're frustrated because you want to be learning your Daf Yomi, you want to be thinking high thoughts about Torah, but this guest of yours isn't on that wavelength yet. And therefore you have to discuss with them maybe the football results. But that is part of Hachnosas Orchim. He says that is why it's greater than Kabbalas Pnei Hashchina. Because you have to limit yourself. You're not elevating yourself. You have to compromise yourself in order to do this mitzvah. Yeah? That's the Baal Shem Tov.
How do you...
I must have gone over time.
It's you from guests and children, and they kind of talk about all matter and sundry, which is inappropriate around the table. There's nothing wrong with them. They're very nice people. They're just getting onto inappropriate topics in front of the children. How to do that without making your guests feel uncomfortable?
Well, is there a number of ways? Oh, I just thought of a brilliant thought I'd like to say. Yeah, I suppose one has to change the subject if it gets uncomfortable. It can be very difficult, but we have to know that bringing unsavoury guests into the house can be spiritually damaging, as we discussed. But my grandmother, my mother's mother, used to say, when somebody feels at home in your own house, that is the greatest bracha of all. And it's an important message I think we can carry with us. And the way I like to look at it is, when we're young and we talk about Judaism is a way of life, it's much more than that. The way I like to define Judaism when I speak to audiences, particularly to people who are not yet enrolled much in Yiddishkeit, I say Judaism is the highest method of communication. It's communication between man and God, and it's communication between man and man, or woman and woman, people and people. But we have to have the ability to communicate. And Hachnosas Orchim is the greatest communication of all. You know, when you communicate with Hashem, you're learning Torah, you're davening, you say the Shema, you've got Kavona, that's one form of communication. And of course you're not going to wear shatnas, and you have pay on the corner of your field, and all these are mitzvahs, they're all communication. Every single mitzvah you do is communication. And every mitzvah Ben Adam L'Chaveiro is communication. And you give tzedakah, and you visit the sick. It's all communication, and it's all the way that you do it, not just that you do it. And Hachnosas Orchim is that greatest communication of all, when you bring them into your own private territory, and you show them that they're welcome, you show them that you enjoy having them, even if inside yourself you don't really want to. That is the greatest thing of all, and that you can communicate them at the highest level. I used to watch my great uncle, Dine Posen, the friend of the Rocha. He was one of the greatest. He was on the Beis Din of the Adas. And I used to watch him. I sat there at his table, and I used to once watch him talking to a guest who was talking the biggest schmaltzes. And he showed such interest, and he asked questions about it, that it really concerned him deeply. That is the way to do hachnosas orchim. And it's something which we can carry with ourselves. Try and do a mitzvah which is very, very difficult to keep, and with that we can receive and accept and become shleimus with HaKadosh Baruch Hu and with ourselves. Thank you.